Broadcasting from atop the Hensler Financial Building in the heart of Georgia's financial district, Kennesaw, Georgia. This is Money Talks.
We're back. Money Talks. I'm Bill Lako, along with Troy Harmon and the good Dr. Gene Hensler.
Good to be here with you. Good to be seen. What can I say? I got a question here from Devin and Hiram. I've heard you say time and again, never invest in airlines. But I've had my eye on Air Lease Corp for a while. How are you going to talk me out of it? Well, Troy, you can try that, but I'm going to give you my reason. The airlines haven't made a nickel since the Wright brothers flew a plane. Collectively, they've never, ever, ever made money. What will happen is Delta will have a good year, and they'll put more flights in the pattern, and it'll go straight down.
So I'd like to point out this is a Sunday talk show.
Oh, doggone it.
Okay. And you can email complaints to Dr. Gene @insler.com.
Bill Lako at... Now, tell him about Air Lease Corp. He's fighting, he's fighting against the tide. But go ahead.
Well, basically what they do is they purchase aircraft and then they lease them out to airlines. So it's not like they're breaking them up and letting people lease time on them. This is an airline lease company. And if you go with, your original notion, if you think that airlines are bad and these people are going to be reliant on the airline being solvent, then right away you got an issue.
They got a whole bunch of planes out in the desert they call whitetails.
Right.
What whitetails are, they're planes that don't have any airline insignia
on them.
Yeah, they're
taking them off. Yep.
And they're sitting out there, they're 727s, they're perfectly capable of flying.
Yeah.
And the airlines have reduced the amount of flights to drive.
Yeah.
But what happens is one airline says, the heck with it, we're going to have four more flights into Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And they put the planes
on.
So somebody else goes, well, then we better – they're taking some of our market. We better go offer more flights.
Yeah. Even though the company's had some significant long-term growth and, they expect to grow by over 20% in the coming 3 to 5 years, the next business cycle basically. Their valuation looks halfway attractive. I think based on our experience with airlines, I would say don't do it. Yeah, the company doesn't meet our financial criteria either, so I would avoid Air Lease.
Are there companies out there, Troy, I think there are, that lease boxcars?
Yeah, there are some. I couldn't tell you right away. There's some logistics companies that do that, and, generally speaking, that's not a – it's not a high growth business, so it we generally
better to buy a house and lease it than to buy a boxcar and lease it.
Right. Yeah. Well,
houses are more marketable.
Not only that. I mean, where the biggest need is generally halfway across the country from where your boxcars are. So how are you going to get them there? It's going to cost you a good portion.
I trust you this. Whatever that boxcar is going, it's going to go by Overlook.
Yeah.
That is the problem. I'm serious. That is one busy rail line going through there. I mean, I'm not complaining either. It's commerce. I see them
right,
going.
Right, sure.
It's dollars in the pocket.
So we got a question from Bill Murray. He says in September.
The actor.
Yeah.
The actor. He called me from.
Usually they tell us
Venice,
where they're from.
From Venice. Clooney wedding.
Yeah, there you go. It says in September, lots of people were saying before the markets can safely move ahead, we need a 10 to 20% correction. Well, we got a correction in October, but it was only 9%. Does that count as the correction we needed? And now have we gotten to where we can move ahead, are we now on solid ground or on thin ice?
That's technical analysis, which we are not experts at.
That's true.
We get 5% moves in the market,
Three times a year on average.
We get a 10% move once a year.
Once a year on average,
And we haven't had one in 3 years?
It was pretty, 2011.
If you count it from the close, that's true, but it blew through it the day.
Yeah.
Intraday.
Okay. We had the intraday overall move from September 18th through midday on October 15th was 9.83%. If you're looking just at the S&P 500, but What we did see with the Russell 1000, 2000, and 3000, all three of those indexes were down more than 10%. The S&P 400, which is the mid-cap index, and the 600 fell 12.5% and 13.1% respectively. And actually, those smaller cap stocks started rolling over about July, thereabouts, started falling. And then the NASDAQ was down 10.7%. So I believe it's a correction.
Yeah, listen,
you can call it that.
It's been abnormal in terms of the lack of volatility over the last few years.
Well, and really what changed during that time, the only thing that we can really tie back to around the middle of October is the notion that Ebola was about to take over. We saw the first cases, late September, early October. We had lots of fear. We started seeing other cases that were related to the ones that we had in the hospital at that time. But really, I mean, we still see we see growth, but it's slow in the United States. Europe was already having its issues. There's almost always a market response, but really the only thing that's changed other than nobody's afraid of Ebola is the elections. Now we have the elections, and what is that going
to
do?
Let's keep in mind some things, all right? And we try to remind this. One of the value of us to our clients is that when they want to sell and they panic, we stop them from doing that. We don't stop them. We convince them not to. That you average the market dropping 20% or more every 3 years. It's a norm.
Right.
We get a 15% drop every 2 years, a 10% drop every year, and a 5% drop every 3 years. That's a normal market.
Well, and I think it's important to point out, Gene, that those drops don't just happen. There's always an event.
Yeah, that's
that causes the panic, and then you'll get the phone calls
usually,
that say it's different this time.
It's an exogenous variable, we call that, in economics.
Wow.
Something outside that no one has thought
Google
about.
That. That's a big word. That's two big words.
That's right.
Exogenous.
This is not an eleemosynary institution.
No, it's not.
And so keep that in mind.
Three words you've learned today, Troy.
I can't even write them down.
keep in mind, this number really shocked me. I hadn't thought much about it. But from that 1987 quote crash, the market's up 10 times.
I know. Ten times.
What is it up from the last one when it dropped 50%? What is it up from there?
Oh, it's up over 130%. I mean,
it's we're hitting all-time highs again.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have the ability to last through that market going down. So you can't afford to have money in the market that you need.
Right.
And we have a 10-year rule. That's how we use it. But you may want to have a 5-year rule or a 7-year rule. Do whatever you want to do. But the idea is don't say I'm saving for the down payment of my house in 3 years and I'm putting it in the stock market.
Right.
You might be up for a rude awakening 3 years from now and you find that you have 30% less than you put in.
Right.
So that's quite possible to have.
Well, and even if you follow the rules, the 7 or 10 or whatever number you're going to choose, you have to have the courage to
– Yes. We at least can tell our clients, do you need the money today?
Call us in 10 years.
Yeah, call us in 10 years when you need it. Call us in 7 years if you still need the money.
Yeah, right.
All right, here's the question of the week, guys. Borrowing for college. How much money should a student borrow for college? Here's my opinion. Zero. You got to work and pay for it.
Okay. That's okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I tell you why. That if you work while you're going to college, it may take you 2 years longer to graduate, but you come out of college debt-free.
Yeah.
That's $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 less.
Right.
Maybe more than that, okay, in state. It tangles you up for years and years and years.
Right.
The real problem with borrowing isn't paying for school, because the cost to go to Kennesaw State is so doggone cheap, it's unbelievable. Okay,
yep.
And if you have the hope, it's even cheaper. The problem is they let them borrow to cover their living expenses, and that's where I completely agree with you. If you have to borrow to pay for school, fine, because that's what, $8,000 a year, something like that.
Yeah.
But if you're going to pay for your living expenses, which includes going out and drinking,
right?
Then no, you're going to be paying for this forever.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm thinking room and board, et cetera.
No, I completely agree. I mean, they can live at home. I mean, there are,
And let me give a piece of advice out there, too, is that rather than going away to school for undergraduate, stay close to home. And if folks within the listening area here have got great universities to choose from at very reasonable costs. You can go to Tech, you can go to Georgia State, you can go to Kennesaw State. There's all sorts of schools around here. Emory sort of prices itself out of the market. You might as well go out and party at Georgia and pay the same amount, you know.
Well, look, we've talked about these studies before. It's mind-boggling how much more money you make with a college degree than a high school diploma.
Correct.
But it's also mind-boggling how much less money you make versus getting a college degree from Kennesaw, Georgia State, or UGA versus Harvard.
Yeah.
It's not the percentage increase in how much more money you're going to make by having an Ivy League education is not significantly different from...
That's right. And also, if you do want to have that fancy name behind you, get it by going to graduate school for your master's in a year.
Right.
And then no one's going to ever ask you if you got an undergraduate degree from Kennesaw State and you got a master's degree from MIT. There's no one on earth going to care where you got your undergraduate degree.
Oh, no, they're going to, what? Am I what? You went to Kennesaw.
Right, you know,
am I who?
We got a bias for Kennesaw, you know, right. Fans like that.
Well, I know the college counselors recommend that you shouldn't borrow more than you could pay back in the first year of your working. So
that's impossible.
It is hard now. It's almost, that is.
So if you were going to be an engineering student, you had $50,000 or $60,000, you expect, they say, borrow that much. Probably the good news is, getting back to your point, though, Gene, is the average balance right now, 71% of students have college debt, and the average balance is $29,400. So
that's
well
not unreasonable. If you go out
right,
graduate and have $29,000.
Actually, while we're beating the subject to death,
sure, let's
I have another question for you.
Yeah.
So is it better for to take a loan, or is it better for mom and dad to dip into their retirement?
Take a loan.
Oh, yeah. Can't borrow for retirement, right?
Right.
Yeah, can't borrow for retirement, and that grows tax-free. And I do believe you're the expert on this. I think, aren't college loans tax-deductible?
Depends on the – yes. Up to, I think it's 25. It might have changed this year, so don't quote me. But I think up to the first $2,500 a year in interest.
Yeah.
Is tax deductible, yes.
And the minute mom and dad pulled out of the retirement account, they're going to pay ordinary income tax on it?
Right. But what if they weren't going to borrow against the account or have to withdraw, but they just stopped saving? They have to stop saving of the 401k.
Well, I say the kids all look out for themselves. You know my idea. You want to spend your last penny, the day before you die, the last penny, and leave nothing to your kids.
That's true.
But an education and a lot of love. That's my viewpoint. That's right.
Lots and lots of
somehow,
love.
Somehow, I have calculated I'm going to live to be 150. So my kid, my default, is going to get some money.
Yeah.
That's true.
A little rat.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Bill, to your point, Georgia Tech students have about a $26,412 average debt.
How much?
$26,400.
Well, that's pretty good for getting out of Tech.
Yeah, Kennesaw State, $20,670 thereabouts.
Well, that makes
sense. So, you know, they got a lesser debt.
Our tuition's higher at Tech than it is at Kennesaw State.
Yeah.
And I think that probably it takes them a little longer to get out of Georgia Tech.
Yeah. UGA is lower even than Kennesaw State, believe it or not, $19,600.
Well, that's because probably kids with more money go there. They don't pick up any debt.
Could be.
Another quick one. Well, ETFs eventually replace mutual funds. What do you think? That's Harold from Peachtree Corners.
Yeah. I don't think so. I tell you, there's a lot of stuff that's out there and talking about it. If you look at the numbers, ETF usage has grown significantly, but it still hasn't gotten anywhere close to the amounts that are held in mutual funds.
Is there any inherent advantage to an ETF over a mutual fund, other than you can trade it during the day, which we don't really care about. We're a long-run investor.
Expenses
are
lower.
And you can borrow against it.
Expenses are lower.
Yeah. That would be the only thing that it has going for it. The expenses are lower. And they're all, quote, non-managed.
Yeah, passive strategies. And, you know, when you got a mutual fund, you can use an active strategy, meaning that you don't have to totally follow what the market's got. Not only that, you know, within the fund, it can be managed for tax purposes. So you can work to lower the tax amount that would have to be paid by the investors through the dividend that's paid out.
You know, if the SEC just came out with a rule that for ETFs, they have to be transparent. So if you wanted to open an active ETF, you have to post your transactions daily.
Yes.
And so you don't have to do that in a mutual fund. I would say to you that probably ETFs, we may run just a minute long here, that if they were able to allow for that to happen, then, yeah, I don't know why you'd have a mutual fund versus an ETF.
Right.
But, you know, now you can, because you can only get actively managed in mutual funds, and they're probably still going to be around. Yeah. At least under the current rules.
Well, if you just look at the sheer numbers, at the end of 2013, $15 trillion were held in mutual funds, whereas $1.7 trillion were being held in ETFs.
Right.
So, you know, that, even if they grow huge, it's going to take a long time for them to grow sufficient to overcome the mutual fund. And the model still seems to be.
And the other side of this is we can talk about the marketing side of this, that you have people actively selling mutual funds. You don't really have a lot of people actively selling ETFs.
Right.
That's true. That's
so
true.
There's
no enticement for them to do it.
That's right.
Right.
Okay. All right, we'll take a short break. We're going to be right back. And we can get Bill a chance to vent.
Vent? I couldn't be happier. I'm sitting next to you.
Well, that is a plus.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.